what are some other competitors in the space of the DMS, you know, that, that are pretty common?
Yeah, I think, you know, you've named kind of the bigger hitters there. You know, we have dealers that join us from Lizzie is one of them. Black Lizzie. Pearl, we hear of Ideal. I mean, there's a number of systems out of there, you know, out there that dealers use. And many of us do certain things very well, you know, as you mentioned. I'll just say that right up front. It doesn't matter which DMS it is. We all have room to improve. So, you know, ultimately, but those are some of the other competitors that we see in the marketplace out there, just people who come and go.
Back to the latest episode of the Dealership Fix It podcast. I am your host. My name is Jacob Berry, and today we've got a special guest with us. His name is Justin Quinn. Now, he is the product manager at DX1 in their DMS field, and today we're going to talk about exactly that, the DMS in your dealership. So I'd like to welcome Justin onto the program here. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, Jacob. Thanks for having me.
Good, man. Good. So we were talking a little bit before about a little of your history. Can you just kind of recap a little bit for us your dealership industry experience and the kind of different roles that you've had within the dealership itself?
Yeah, sure. Well, it started early at a young age, as far as just like a lot of people getting into dealerships. It was part of my family racing, being out the track, you know, big groups of stuff. And as I got a little bit older, I got to know these dealers a little bit better from sponsoring at the races, had one close to my school. So got to go in there, and my first experience, yeah, was pushing brooms and pulling parts and, you know, things you'd probably let a young teenager do in a dealership who just kind of loves it. And then, as time went on, I was chasing a professional racing career. So dealerships were always a great spot, you know, for trying to have a job. They could understand a little bit of what I was doing. There were some fringe benefits to discounts on parts and other stuff, but overall it worked. And So I spent time in dealerships in Memphis, Tennessee. When I was on the East Coast, I was racing out there. That was, you know, probably the first real working, dedicated to working job, and started at shipping and receiving. That was really my first imprint in a dealership, really working, which I was really glad about, because, you know, as time went on, you know, either at that moment or as a parts manager or anywhere in the dealership, you realize how important that shipping and receiving position can go. So I think it kind of got my brain geared up towards more of a management side. And then as I continued trying to get that professional motocross career, I worked back out to the West Coast, which is where I'm from, and had a chance to work in a big multi-store dealership on the coast. Same thing was in shipping, receiving there. I mean, I just think I really fit that role. You know, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but most dealers are looking for good, dependable people who can not cut corners and do things right. And that's how I was taught in that dealership. And then later on, I was fortunate enough to work for KTM. I was worked in their racing program early on. So not quite the dealership, but certainly working with an OEM. And then after that, I worked my way. It went with a distributor. At the time, it was motorcycle stuff. They were purchased many years ago. But I actually had an opportunity to work as a rep, as a distributor. You know, in dealerships, you meet these guys all the time. And you always wonder what it's like on that side of the fence. So it was nice to exactly do that, be on that side of the fence and understand, you know, what it's like, again, to meet a lot of dealers. I think that was really the time I started meeting dealers, you know, really understanding there's not just one way to do it type of thing, and how diverse the industry can be. So yeah, I was able to do that. And then eventually settled into Sacramento, California, and worked with a dealership group there for 5 years, and came in to manage their parts departments for both stores. And then eventually ended up working my way into a general manager role with them. And then, decided I wanted to go back to school, kind of increase, got a degree. And at the same time, started to do some consulting for dealerships, you know, again, just trying to help dealers understand how to match their DMS with their processes. You know, no matter what DMS you're in, that's always a challenge. So did that for quite a few years. And then, as the most recent before my time here at DX1, I was up with one of my good friends, purchased a dealership up in Montana, and had a chance to work with him. So back in again, doing that. And then eventually one thing led to another. And now I'm with DX1. That dealership ended up signing up with DX1. So we got to know each other, and they said, hey, we're, you know, looking for a right kind of person, and asked me if I was interested. And so here I am now, almost 3 years in as a product manager for a DMS.
Wow, man. What a career. So you've got a lot of longevity in there. And I just, before we get into the DMS conversation, because that's what this podcast is going to be about, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about your history there. First of all, when you were on the KTM racing team, did you know any of the pro riders that were part of that whole racing organization back in the day, like Roger DeCoster and some of the other champions?
Yeah, I got to meet, you know, guys like Roger. So my boss at KTM is in the AMA Motorcycle Hall of Fame. He's been on the MIC Industry Council. His name's Selvaraj Narayana. I think, you know, if you've been around the industry, you probably know that name. He's everywhere. He's at the races. He's at business. He's at shows. And he really imprinted a lot of this work, not work ethic per se, when it, you know, I thought my dad did a good job, but when it came to stepping it up and again, working at KTM and seeing all the intricacies. And he introduced me to many of those racers, the Roger DeCosters of the world. I mean, we were competing against them. And then of course I was the team coordinator. So at the time we had Grant Langston, Brock Sellers, David Pinkry, and Kelly Smith. Being a privateer, you get to know some of those guys, but they're your competitors. So it was much different. Yeah. To get to know people, I could always say, yeah, I know of that person, but I don't know them personally type of thing. So yeah, there was a great opportunity to meet a lot of some childhood heroes, some peers, and eventually form some friendships with people who were competitors at the time. That's so cool, yeah, it was really great.
That's super cool, man. Super cool. A lot of people dream of that. So, and then you mentioned that you, the last dealership that you were working with, doing some consulting, and then ultimately signed on with DX1. What's the name of your friend there in Montana?
Yeah, Blitz Motorsports up in Montana. He's a good friend, goes back a long time. He's like a lot of us. He's why he's in the dealership game, just a love. You know, it's been in his life the whole time. And yeah, right before COVID, he got a call. I got a call and he said, hey, I got a bought a Yamaha dealership and, you know, looking for some help to get it going. And we went up there and, you know, thought maybe there could be, you know, something we could do in the long run. And yeah, we got him going and I think business was going good. And, you know, like I said, this opportunity came up it looked like a good opportunity to take. And I think he was very happy for me and he's thriving and doing great today.
Good deal, man. Shout out to Bliss Motorsports up there in Montana. Enjoying that cool weather in summertime here.
Yes, sir.
Okay, cool. Well, let's get into the meat and potatoes, right? So DMS, dealer management software, dealer management system, right?
Yep.
It's an acronym that could, it could bring some, you know, some rough feelings for a lot of operators, right? There's certainly some good points to a DMS. There could also be some rough points, some hard edges, right? That a lot of dealership operators and staff rub up against, but let's kind of break down a couple of the points of the DMS, right? So let's talk about the available products that are out there that someone listening to this might be using, you know, at that time, right? There's the big one, right? There's DX1, right? You guys got a pretty cool DMS, right? I know a lot of dealers have been using it as of late, last couple of years. You guys got a lot of new onboards, you know, throwing out some competition names for you here, just to kind of draw some comparison. CDK Global. With yep. Lightspeed is obviously the big one, right? Yep. And then you got some factory back ones like Harley. They use Talon. What are some other competitors in the space of the DMS? You know that are pretty common.
Yeah, I think you know, you've named kind of the bigger hitters there. You know, we have dealers that join us from Lizzie is one of them. Black Lizzie. Pearl, we hear of Ideal. I mean, there's a number of systems out of there, you know, out there that dealers use. And many of us do certain things very well, you know, as you mentioned. I'll just say that right up front. It doesn't matter which DMS it is. We all have room to improve. So, you know, ultimately, but those are some of the other competitors that we see in the marketplace out there, just people who come and go.
Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by Moto Hunt Premium. Moto Hunt Premium empowers power sports dealers with data and technology to give the best possible market advantage on every vehicle at your dealership. Moto Hunt Premium offers a suite of features such as real-time market analysis, inventory management, and up-to-date pricing guides like JD Power and NPA. Dealers love to leverage the platform to identify potential inventory risks and potential issues with your online listings. And it also helps to execute make and model strategies, enabling dealers to help move inventory faster and make more profit. To start leveraging our technology at your dealership, go to motohuntpremium.com. That's motohuntpremium.com to learn more and request a free inventory audit for your dealership today. Okay, cool. And let's talk about just like the core dynamic of what a DMS is supposed to do for a specific dealer, right? So if you can, just in a nutshell, just give us a brief description, regardless of the product that a dealership is using, or maybe someone is listening to this first time, they're they're just a regular sales guy. And they're like, what the hell is a DMS, right? What is a DMS's function within the dealership life?
Sure. Well, at the core of a DMS system, it's an inventory management system. You know, that's at the heart of everything. Yeah, you can sell stuff and use all these tools that are provided to you, but it all starts there, whether it's units, whether it's parts, and even as units come into your service departments, you know, you're managing inventory. So, you know, to me, that's where it all starts. And, you know, depending on your size, your structure, your philosophy towards things, that's when you start to see, you know, kind of pulling those layers back. You know, what does my business do, and how can I utilize those tools that are within a particular DMS to kind of get us to where we want? So, you know, from there, you know, and in today's climate, things are really changing for a DMS. You know, what we were talking about, you know, even 10 years ago is changing fairly dramatically with, you know, the technology. So, you know, those are some of the things that are starting to come into play too, that you used to think, okay, well, yeah, I receive parts, I sell parts, I send out some receipts, maybe I manage some books within the system. And that's what I do. I'm just kind of turnkey. But yeah, you know, now it's, you know, there's lots of pressure on dealers to be providing numbers and meeting quotas and really justifying what they're doing, and maybe with a particular manufacturer or not. So, you know, today it's really hard to just say what it is, because the demand on the dealer is so high. You know, e-commerce and brick and mortar were almost at odds against each other for years. You know, the dealers were still trying to figure out what to do. And some of those early smart pioneer dealers figured it out quick, which is, we can do this together. And, you know, once COVID came in, I definitely think it made people kind of rethink their businesses one way or another, you know. And during that time, we all know people had the luxury of being usually very busy. So again, I think it really started, you started to find out as a dealer what it is we need to do to meet the high ends of the business. So again, I think that's what a DMS, again, is designed to do, let you bring in that inventory, and then eventually through many different tools, manage that process of distributing that inventory. And of course, you have, you know, customer, all kinds of stuff that comes behind that, you know, reporting, managing customer satisfaction, leads, rapport, business development management. So it just really starts to finger out, right? You know, based off of what you need. But at a core, that DMS is the best way for you to keep track of what your business is doing. And we still know a lot of dealers that are running their businesses on pen and paper, which, you know, we're not going to say good or bad, but, you know, that's really what we're talking about, especially to these folks out there that you might be saying, well, we don't know what a DMS is, or shy away from the topic of a DMS. You know, ultimately keeping track of those things and being able to do something with your information is pretty valuable.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, right? Let's address the people out there that may be still using pen and paper, Excel spreadsheets, or, you know, something outside of a traditional DMS, you know, from all the available vendors that are out there now, right? You know, so it gathers all your data, keeps it kind of in a core, you know, nucleus centralized area that you can access. And it's really made for, you know, mostly the sales department, mostly the P&A department, right? For that inventory, you know, type of management system that you were talking about. But it can serve a lot of functions also for service, right? It can serve a lot of functions, like you said, for reporting, all these accounting type systems, right? Some people have bookkeepers that use that for their open quotes and deals. They use it for their, you know, their systems to collect taxes in. I mean, there's a whole bunch of functions for it, but, you know, let's take DX1's system, DX1's DMS. What is the main department that DX1 really focuses on? If you could choose any of the departments, parts, sales, or service, or even motor clothes, if it's a Harley Davidson dealership, right? Because they like to keep their apparel kind of separate from parts. What does DX1 mostly focus their DMS on, if you had to pick any one of those departments as a priority?
Sure. Well, I'm going to be a little bit difficult for you and throw in another department, which is our customers. You know, ultimately, we are a cloud-based agile software. And, you know, somebody's saying, well, what's agile mean? We release each month. So when you ask that question, where do we put our focus? We put our focus where our customers are telling us we need focus. You know, we are very open with our group in particular, ways to quickly and enter in idea submissions. You know, our support team wants to talk with you in less than a minute. We have, you know, specifically designed account managers that are reaching out and managing this process. And internally, we are all meeting. So, you know, although that's not exactly what you asked, that's exactly what we do, is focus on the customers and let our customers tell us what's going on. And particularly, I think that was a strategic advantage for us and our customers. When you think about times like COVID, where things seemingly overnight just drastically flipped and changed, you know, our ability to respond to that was paramount to our success and our customer success during that time. So, but to kind of go back to, I know what you're asking there too, you know, I would say parts is definitely seems to be a lot of the hubs, right? You know, you bring in stuff for service, you're still moving parts from your dealership into the service department. You know, as you're selling units, you are installing parts and selling accessories and selling gear. And, you know, as people establish rapport with customers to try to get those long-term relationships, that still continues to usually happen in your parts and your service department. So, you know, I'd say over this year, we've definitely been focusing on parts. The year before, again, kind of looking at, you know, what we can see data wise and what we know the industry was doing while COVID was going, we were prepping up our service area, our service module. You know, we had a feeling and the numbers kind of still support that today, that service would really continue to be busy and grow after COVID. And we kind of made that decision to put that work ahead of time. And for us and our dealers, we feel like that's paying off right now. So again, you can see how we're trying to be more responsive to dealers' needs than just focusing on what we think the dealer needs in a particular area.
That's great. I don't think a lot of the other DMS options out there could say the same thing, right? It's just kind of like, hey, this is our product. It is what it is. There's really no advancements in that product. Buy it or don't buy it. But I think what a lot of those other guys, I'll say that, is what they're counting on is the stickiness, right? So once, you know, once they signed that contract 10 years ago, they're kind of stuck because a lot of their business revolves around, you know, keeping that customer locked into their business practices within this DMS, right? I know of one in particular that likes to do that. I want to switch a little bit to using the DMS in the sales department, right? Because that's who I think a lot of these operators who are making the business decisions to either fully utilize the DMS or not, is really that's their background, right? A lot of these operators are going to be former sales managers, desk managers, and they're talking about quotes and deals, right? How would a particular DMS be used in sense of writing quotes and deals, looking at some of the profitability in these quote systems? I mean, tell me a little bit about that function in your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, having used systems over 20 years, you know, fundamentally, when it comes to doing things like invoicing, we're all not terribly far away from each other, right? You're adding parts, or in this case, if we're talking about major units, you know, at the core of it, you're putting units in inventory, and then you're adding them to invoices, and then getting them out. You know, in terms of one of the things that I think we do really well, and when I mentioned, you know, being in the process of having to choose a DMS provider before I worked for a DMS provider, one of the big components here was what we do is end-to-end, meaning, you know, this DMS thing we've been talking about, you know, departments, or it is a DMS, and talking about how it's changed over the years. Well, now, you know, it used to be before many years ago, if I get a unit and I receive it in inventory, I want to list it on my website and I want to list it, you know, at these other third-party destinations where I'm going to be selling products. It was a really manual process, and it still is for many people. You know, on the sell side, leads. I mean, leads are just so valuable for dealers. Again, you know, get in a competitive market, being able to get that information quick and do something with it. And our system, you know, we haven't really talked about, but does a lot of integrations. You know, that's kind of one of the big things that the industry is kind of moving to and has moved to is integrations. So for our dealerships, you know, thinking about using a dealer management system and the benefits of it, particularly within that sales office, is that ability to manage the time and still manage the customers. That's a challenge for dealers, I feel, all the time, is keeping up with these tasks, you know, that we will talk about or can talk about, you know, what's it take to do, and at the same time, just run your business. And, you know, dealerships don't necessarily have the hugest profit margins. So, you know, always finding those balances between staffing and seasonality and market conditions and all those types of things are difficult enough, let alone, you know, trying to have to understand, am I paying somebody each day to just pound on a keyboard to put stuff up and down? So I think, you know, from that side, you know, providing tools that interact with the DMS to help manage those processes, to make it seamless all the way from when the customer eventually leaves with the unit. And then again, you know, some of those other processes within the DMS outside the inventory management, where you're doing follow-up, you're sending your customers newsletters, scheduling events, again, really trying to keep that business under your dealership and in your dealership. So, you know, on the major unit side, I think particularly that's one of those important areas in our system. When you add in a unit, it goes to all those destinations automatically, When you sell a unit, it comes down automatically. So just right off the bat, you know, when you think about a DMS, and again, on the sell side, that's a lot of time, you know, so thinking about how to use a DMS to take a lot of that manual labor, a lot of that manual clicks out is just as important as anything else you can do in a system.
Well, let's expand about that on the sales side, right? So the major unit retail side, you're almost talking about this as a function of a CRM, right? The follow-up, the lead management, some of the automation, pre-sale, post-sale, emails, text messages. Are you saying that you envision almost the DMS being a CRM as well?
Well, yeah, and that's what we are. I mean, we have a CRM product that integrates with us. It's part of us, a TLP product. But yeah, I mean, that's the reality of it. You know, I have that unique view as a product manager, even though we get in lots and lots of requests, you know, to be able to talk to people to see the big picture. You know, somebody may ask for something, but my job is to pry. Why, how, what are your workflows? What are you doing? It's really always interesting to find out that I start talking about something that's within the DMS, but by the time we talk about the workflow, it has started with a lead or it has started with some other process. And again, you know, customer retention and all that stuff that comes before and after the sale, I think that's what the founders and the current team did a great job with this software is realizing that's really what it's about. You know, not going to 5, 6, 7 different things. You know, dealers still have to do that today. I need to go here to look up part availability. I need to go here to create a warranty. I need here to do this and that. And the reality is dealers are really wanting to have it all in one space. So yeah, you know, and that sell sits right in the middle of all that, right? You know, getting them in and then keeping them there. And that process within the sell is, you know, I still think the easier part, you know, adding units, again, we all do that fairly similar, I think, as DMSs go. But, you know, understanding that it's always an end-to-end process for the dealer, I think that's what's been successful about what we've done up to this point. And what I hope our dealers feel is a successful tool for them. In fact, I know they do. That's why they're with us.
That's interesting. Okay, so let's take two different roles within the dealership, right? You've got the sales manager who's mostly going to spend his day in the DMS, right? In terms of major unit sales. And then you've got a salesperson, right? And he's going to be in the CRM following up with leads, making his phone calls, doing his logs. How would those two systems interact with your kind of all-in-one system, right? Would one person have access to certain things and not others, and the sales manager has access to everything? How does that typically look on the interface?
Yeah, our system is configurable. Okay. So almost anything in our system, most things you can go in and decide whether somebody wants to have access to this or that. You know, yeah, in terms of what you're asking, you know, the lead can be generated through the lead management system. Even if you don't have our lead management product, we have our lead system also built straight within the DMS. You know, so if you're participating with a program, say with an OEM, or even just your standard website leads, you know, when a customer's interacting there, those leads are coming into the DMS in real time. You're getting real-time notifications. You know, that's one of the big things we're really focusing on, are real-time notifications, because that's really what dealers are asking us for. You know, so in the case of a lead, you can know right away. You know, in terms of helping the dealer, you know, understand what the next steps are, you know, that's something I think that can be assumed. You know, we can assume a salesperson is going to handle the CRM. We can assume the general manager is going to be kind of sitting at the desk. But again, you know, working with over 600 dealers, this is the interesting part, is sometimes dealerships have 3 people doing everything, you know, 5 people that are running around. So again, you know, I think they have the same problem, small or large, which is how do we keep up with it all? You know, when we're trying to communicate, and that's what our system is focused on. So yeah, you'll get a notification right away saying, hey, this lead's come in. It'll show them the important information. And then we have a product that kind of guides them on a road to sell, you know? So again, it kind of lets them manage that process right within the DMS to say, you know, we've made first contact, or we've scheduled appointments, we have to-dos, you know, you can build information into potential trade, you can send brochure information. So again, that first part, you know, really kind of trying to lock the customer come in. And then once you get that commitment, that can seamlessly just turn into a quote, right? You know, so you have that information in the beginning. You're not having a lead over here and then later going in and then typing all that customer information again, and then manually tying back the sale back to that lead. You know, as that stuff comes in, we tie that all to the customer. So that way, as dealers, and this is, you know, again, that important part of that management system, when we said, you know, why is it important to get off of paper and pen, or what does a DMS do? Well, it gives you quick access to lots of data. and managing your customers' data is really important. You know, how many times they've come in, the types of purchases they're making, you know, your internal notes, leads, all these things we're talking about. So, you know, in that case, our dealers could decide who has that. You know, in a traditional sense, sure, the sales guy can get the lead, he can make the contact with the customer, start working it up, and then eventually bring it to the desk. But even within the DMS, you know, when we talk about things that are more lead related, so we put out a feature a couple of years ago that got the Nifty 50 award, and this is an example again, our responsiveness to market conditions. Right when COVID started, man, we were just flooded with, I want to advertise units I don't have, and I want to sell them inside my DMS like they're in stock. I want to be able to take payments and say that they're coming soon and all this type of stuff. So we were able to respond to that. And that was able to really increase leads, increase that conversion rate for the dealers to eventually get people in, get deposits, and get them committed to units. You know, anybody listening to this who's been in the dealership period during COVID knows, you know, that was a pretty tough period. You know, it's good. Everybody wanted something, but, you know, getting product, getting stuff, keeping customers satisfied was tough. So again, that's what I think our system really helps with. By the time that lead comes in, we give them the ability to manage the product, whether it's in or out of the store, and connect with that e-commerce value. And again, bring it to the brick and mortar. You know, it's just not separate anymore. You know, you still can't necessarily just sell a bike straight through your website. You know, you can get really close, but still most people are coming down and obviously signing paperwork, taking delivery of items, using tools, but eventually they end up under the dealership. So, and then after that, you know, we have a lot of management tools. I mean, you know, when you talk about a sales manager sitting at the desk, you know, that's when we start talking about reporting and managing inventory and flooring. You know, it's a big topic right now. You know, flooring has not been a topic for anybody for 2 or 3 years because stuff ran out as fast as you got it in. And now a lot of that ordering, a lot of that product that was brought in is now sitting. So, you know, having systems that can help you, you know, manage that, you know, inventory dating, all those types of things, how we're turning over inventory. That's a really important part to think about what's going to happen within a DMS in the sell side.
I want to move back to that CRM DMS component real quick, just for the lead management. Sure. What is your take on some of the automation, right? So a lead comes in to the CRM or to the DX1 DMS.
Yeah.
Where is a particular dealer, you know, what is their want for some of this automation, right? Meaning autoresponders go out, some scheduled sequence emails go out day one, day two, day three. Are you able to write that stuff? Are you able to manage that stuff? Tell me a little bit about that on the communication side for some of these, you know, salespeople, BDC managers, internet managers working these various web leads that are coming through them, you know, through the virtual sense of things.
Yeah. You know, you can manage a lot in our system, you know, and that's where our TLP product comes in. If you're really one of those dealerships that's really looking to maximize that lead process, because, you know, not all dealers are as committed to certain processes as others. You know, some with what our DMS does is exactly right, and others are looking for deeper features. So, you know, yeah, those integrations, those asks, that's a lot of what it is taking out the manual entry, you know, sitting and just constantly rekeying stuff. And additionally, again, it's this notification. So like in our system, we have a lot of configuration around leads. You know, ultimately the most important part is that the lead is addressed, you know, but, you know, for example, somebody could be sick on a day. So it's important to know if a lead comes in on a day that somebody's on vacation, sick or out, that lead could still get followed up on. So, I mean, it's a simple concept, but that's what we're talking about, you know, the ability to continue to profile that customer, to understand what their needs are, document, and again, get them those items or tools or whatever they need in their hands to get them a little bit more committed to you as a dealer, which is, you know, what those business development managers are there 100% for, right? Just, you know, forming that bond in that relationship. So giving them those tools, and of course, communicating with your customer as fast as possible. You know, getting people on the phone is harder and harder these days. It's been hard for a long time, getting people on the phone. So, you know, even email, traditionally stuff goes to spam, stuff goes to junk, but getting stuff to people's phones, that's where people want it. So again, being able to utilize that technology within that lead process and within DX1, we haven't really talked about it yet, but that's one of those nice features that we have built in. That's not necessarily traditionally a DMS item, but as the markets change and consumers want different things, our system can communicate in real time with your customers, if you like, across the dealership, special orders, service, all kinds of stuff. So again, that's what we're hearing is real time. and anything you can do to help take out the manual entry, you know, because after that, it just really depends on the dealer about, you know, what they're equipped for, what their philosophy is, and what they can maintain or handle.
100%. Efficiency is the name of the game when it comes to dealing with all these different opportunities coming to any given dealer at any given day, right? So let's switch gears over to the inventory on the P&A side, right? Because that was one of the topics that you brought up, and you certainly have a long experience in that field doing ship and receiving, inventory manager, parts manager. Tell me a little bit about the day-to-day when a dealer needs to manage their P&A, right? They got a lot of different SKUs to go through. They got, let me hear it from you. Tell me what the day-to-day from a parts manager using a DMS, how would that look like?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just the day-to-day for a parts manager is a fight and a struggle, right? Because as a parts manager, you know, I think it's very traditional. They get grouped. Well, I'm a parts manager, but I'm also a purchasing agent. You know, I'm a manager of people. I got HR, I got customer relations. And of course, I have all my traditional duties. So, you know, traditional duties, I got to get drawers open in the morning, right? So a DMS is important to balancing your drawers, you know, in your end of day. That's a really important process that most people in the dealership don't think about because they don't have to do it. But, you know, how transactional things happen during the day, the mistakes, the things that don't get done, you know, that's usually something the parts manager has got traditionally the most volume, the most transactions, the most credit card swipes. So, you know, I think first and foremost as a parts manager, when you're getting up in the morning and getting your dealership going, that's exactly what you're doing, is usually chasing your tail from the day before. You know, you also have to maintain your inventory. I mean, again, that, you know, dealer management system, we talked about that. And, you know, if you don't have inventory in a store, well, what are you selling? And inventory, you know, small dealership, large dealership, you could go from a dealership having, you know, less than 1,000 parts into some that may have, you know, 500,000 parts. And if you're old, you may have stuff that's built up over 20 years. Yeah. So, you know, at a core, I think, unfortunately for a parts manager, if that's what they're getting chased down on is, you know, why are we out of this part? Why is something negative on hand? Why isn't this special order gone out? Why don't we have this oil for my service department? You know, you're essentially just running around and trying to facilitate the other departments. So I think, you know, that's kind of a general day. You do spend a lot of time, especially our parts managers now, educating people. I mean, this is something definitely that's definitely changed really big time with COVID, is dealers seem to be really struggling finding people who can do certain tasks. So I think managers, particularly parts managers, are being tasked with that today, to either do more themselves, because it's just sometimes easier when customers are standing in front of you, or trying to educate people around you, new employees, to get going. So, you know, that's kind of the constant. What, you know, somebody being asked, hey, what about this oil filter? Where do I find this? How do we do that? So, you know, parts manager really is utilizing the DMS to facilitate all of that. You know, of course, they also then at some point during the day have all the ordering responsibilities, or most dealerships, I will say. So, you know, looking through that list, understanding, you know, what we need, what we don't need, special orders, my service department again. And then during the middle of all that ordering, of course, you're receiving stuff from the day before, or, you know, prior days. And so you also have to manage that information. That's a spot I told you, you know, I'm very passionate about that position, because it can all go wrong there. You know, you really rely upon your shipping and receiving person to do things right. So, you know, if you struggle in that area, usually your parts manager is busy doing that a lot, or spending most of their time undoing that type of stuff. Because you got to remember, at a dealership level, and I know I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it, this all impacts accounting. You know, I think, oh, I was off by a penny or two. What's the difference? Or, you know, these types of things, categories, or what we do. You know, not all the time does that reflect to somebody at the counter receiving, and typically a parts manager is going to be the person dealing with that. So I think, you know, you can see it's kind of this daily struggle to keep up with my tasks, train my people, and report. You know, a lot of dealers for some time, but I see it more and more, especially with COVID again, we're looking at commission type structures. So, you know, once you do something like that, of course, on both sides, numbers need to be right. You know, if you're on commission at your parts counter, you're surely going to be reading reports. And as a parts manager, you're going to want to make sure things are going right. So, you know, I think that's probably one of the more understated parts of that job. It's the hardest to get to, because I think most parts managers are so busy running just the day-to-day operations, but I, you know, sitting down and then having the time to analyze all that is probably the big trick. And it's tough, you know, not everybody has experience with trends or all that. But either way, that's probably one of the more important parts that's just tough to get to or overlooked.
I want to keep scratching that itch, right? Of the parts department with inventory, right? So, I came from, you know, the sales side, did a lot of inventory management on the major unit side. What types of tools could a dealer use within the DMS, or maybe just from your own experience outside of the DMS? You know, we have a little real problem with age, right? Like you said, you know, there could be parts stacking up that are, you know, 10, 15, 20 years old, and they're in the shelf in the back covered in dust. What does a good dealership operator use, or what kind of processes are available to them to help manage some of the age of this, you know, old inventory that's been sitting on a shelf forever?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, traditionally the tools that are out there, most systems I've been in, you know, you have a very traditional kind of print pages thing, right? You batch up an inventory or you run a report and they're count sheets. You know, you hand them out to your people and you go run around and you start to count. Traditionally, you will probably do this while you're closed, depending on your DMS, because it's hard to do inventory like that while you're open, right? Because things you might have counted in the morning might be getting sold. You know, I'm going to toot our own horn for a minute. In DX1, you can do inventory while you're open. So traditionally, count sheets are one of the ways of scanners. You know, I would say that's the second way. I mean, I was using scanners, you know, in the 90s, you know, just when that kind of technology was starting to come in with DMSs. So I think, you know, scanners are probably a very traditional way of doing it. There's a couple different types of scanners. You know, I'd say most of our customers within their budget are using scanners that, you know, connect directly to a PC. You can pony up some money and invest into some stuff that's wireless, has lots of functionality. You can walk out, scan your whole dealership, and then just unplug it and sync it up to your dealership. But again, a lot of small to medium sized dealers aren't looking to invest in that way. Most of them are using count sheets. You know, so that's your kind of, you know, if I'm just simplifying it, you're kind of two traditional ways. You know, of course, companies might hire a company to come in and count, you know, outside of just using the DMS. You know, last year I was pretty excited about this. Our team was able to think about that. And we actually have now designed our physical inventory to work on a mobile device. You know, when we started thinking about those challenges and I was listening to dealers about, well, what they're really wanting was, well, can I do this with my mobile device? I mean, they're in everybody's pockets.
Like with their phone.
Right. You know, so, you know, that's one of the tools we did last August. Again, kind of thinking about inventory and ways to really help the dealer get efficient. So, you know, I'm not really sure what our competitors do in that area these days, you know, what other tools they got. I know they do the traditionals like we did, the printed sheets, and you can use scanners and whatnot. But I was pretty excited about that we were able to get that product out and at least give dealers a different option, you know. And it maybe it's one of those topics for another blog. I really feel like physical inventory and the process of inventory could be its own podcast. It really is that important in the dealership. But to keep it kind of constrained for this podcast, yeah, that's certainly one of the more important roles. And I will say, you know, traditionally, I would say for a dealer as a best practice, if you're really serious about your inventory, you're most likely cycle counting. And if, you know, dealers are not familiar with what cycle counting may be, you know, that's constantly doing inventory. Maybe you're picking a category or a vendor and you're just constantly doing inventory. I worked for Cycle Gear for about a year at one point in time. And they working for that company was, it really opened my eyes to this. To this day, I see very few dealerships who can run with the principles that company does in terms of keeping up with daily tasks. And inventory was one of those. You know, you came in the morning and your system told you what to count in there. And that's what we've been working on, you know, trying to get there with our system as well. It's been an exciting time. I still think, you know, there's lots of room to improve. You know, and I think there's some other technologies that are getting developed and kind of tested out there in the future that can also, you know, bring new options to the dealer in the future. So yeah, we're excited about that. But today we feel like we offer some dealers some great ways to deal with that. And I will tell you, it is probably the most intimidating topic. When, you know, I get to visit a lot of dealerships and work with a lot of dealerships and, you know, it's just something dealers are kind of, it got away from them. Right. And that I think is the case with most tasks in a dealership, but inventory particularly, you know, having to shut down completely, which is what I think a majority of our dealers are still doing. They're still trying to figure out the cycle counting in some ways. You know, you're shutting down your business. You're paying people when you're not bringing in revenue. So, you know, again, dealers, I think, look at that and just try to figure out how to balance it all. So, you know, that's one area we're trying to improve. And I think, you know, for the sake of talking to your podcast crew out there, you know, that's an one of the areas I just think every dealership can improve in, no matter what.
I think a proactive, you know, parts manager who's got a good inventory mind, you know, that's something that's going to be key in a successful dealership, right? So let's kind of just talk about that a little bit more, right? So you were talking about the bin counting, right? Where either you're doing it with some hardware, you've got this new app that allows you to do it with your cell phone, or you're just got traditional, you know, clipboard with a pen and a paper, right? Walking right around counting everything, whether you're after business hours or you're shutting down during business hours, whatever the process may be. How often would a bin count or one of these, you know, full store inventory counts, how often should that be? Monthly, quarterly, annually?
Well, you know, I would say it largely depends on the size of your inventory, right? I think, again, this is one of those things where a parts manager's experience shows. You know, I've always known where we lacked in an area. Somehow these parts always went disappearing. You know, somehow this oil, we always ran out. Or to me anyways, if you know your dealership, there are always some sore spots that just were kind of outliers. You know, I mentioned cycle gear, it never ended. Every morning when we came in, there's just, you know, so many, there's just so many products to count. Every bottle of oil, every spark plug, every jersey, every shirt, goggle lens, tear off, you know, tire, anything you can think of. It's in service, it's in sales, it's on a unit, it's off a unit, it's special ordered, you know, all these types of things. So, you know, when it comes to keeping track of that in-stock stuff, my advice is to dealers is do two things. What's your highest volume and what's the stuff you struggle with the most? And that's where you would really look at. You know, I always thought one of my most important customers in my dealership was my service department. Well, both my departments in a parts department. I know some dealerships are great with this, and many dealerships I've been in, these departments don't really cross-pollinate very well. Not everybody always wants to get along. So I always took the principle to treat them as a customer. So, you know, if you're not managing your inventory on a regular basis and your service department services certain types of vehicles, or you traditionally do certain types of jobs, then yeah, it might be really important to communicate with your service department and understand how good of a job you're doing for them. You know, geez, we always go back there and you guys always show that you have these plugs in stock, but every time we go to the box at zero, can you guys fix that? You know, why? That's an inventory issue. So, you know, I think if a dealer can start there, and then also understand what your resources are. You know, I'm talking a little bit of a perfect world. You know, again, I mentioned it's there's always something going on. So, you know, we want to start counting in the morning. We got a list of what to count. It all looks good, but just like most dealerships, the day presents itself, you know, and you get away from that. So, you know, again, I think that's one of the upsides of our system is traditionally, you know, trying to do this while you're open is very difficult in a traditional system because it just doesn't account for the stuff that's being sold. But again, our system, you know, if you just pick one vendor in the morning and you start and during the middle of the day, you get pulled away, you can still go back and finish that counting that night, the next day. And by the time you've done and batched it and finished the system, ours is going to say, hey, you've also calculated all this in the meantime. Does this look correct? And you can say, yeah, that looks correct, and manage it that way. And I think that's one of the tougher parts of cycle counting is keeping up with it. You know, having somebody who can dedicatedly say, yeah, I'm going to do this every day. It's just like cleaning restrooms in a dealership. Somebody's got to do it, but not everybody does it. So again, those types of tasks that people shy away from because it's just not the funnest thing in the world, but ultimately really important to make sure that we have it right. So, you know, I think that's probably the best way for dealers to decide how to go, at least getting started, and then they'll get a feel for it. You know, you'll start to find things. Yeah, we don't got to count. We got 10 items from this vendor. That's easy to do versus, you know, a major OEM where you may have, you know, 10,000-20,000 hard parts, little bolts, washers, screws, shims, things like that, that are just, you know, you got to keep up. Because the one thing we haven't talked about is obsolescence. So again, you know, as you mentioned, you've seen it, I've seen it, you know, stuff that's got dust on it, you know, it's from the 80s, it's sitting back there. The reality was maybe at some point in time, that manufacturer might've actually taken that back. Or if you're working with a good business department or a good accounting department, maybe they could advise you how you could have handled that, you know, by writing it off or writing it down. So just as important it is to go count your items, it's also just as important to manage those types of items that need to go. So again, I think that's why that, you know, routine counting process helps, is because you're able to manage that process better. Not everything shows up on January 1st, right? You know, we've been receiving stuff all year. So, you know, when's a year come up on this product? When 6 months come up on this product? That's usually a bit of a tougher go. So that's also one element within this inventory factor that dealers really have to manage and look at.
And that's what I wanted to bring up, right? And that's the point I was trying to make earlier, is on the obsolescence part, is that if you've got all this old aged inventory, what type of tools or mechanisms will alert the inventory person to say, hey, this thing's a year old, I need to do something with it, because they might take it back, or I need to mark it down, I need to put it out in the discount corral out in the showroom floor, whatever it is, right? What types of tools or triggers should people be using for that?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, traditionally, again, in most systems I use, there's a report. Right, a part aging report. You can go in there and you can kind of break it down and look at it. But again, you know, depending on your date ranges or what you're looking at, you know, that can be a lot of data to process at one time.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about it yet, but one of the products that we've built over the last couple of years, which are just a hit, are called smart notifications. So, you know, all this stuff we were talking about earlier that just eat up time, lots and lots of time, or people forget or not good at these tasks. We have designed a system that's pretty much managing that for you. So in what you're talking about, a part, yeah, you can have the part aging report, but in your receiving process, we've added in fields that allow you to go and say, tell me on this part, not just a category or not just a general report, so I can be notified in real time. So, you know, that's one of the tools that's been being utilized. We came out with that for parts about 2 months ago, and, you know, dealers are loving it. You know, in that process, we're doing a lot of that real-time notification type of stuff. You know, I mentioned that's what our dealers are asking for, is, you know, how can you help me manage my department? Not click things, not add things. I really, what I need is a virtual employee. And so that's what we've been working on, is a virtual employee. It doesn't go to sleep. It doesn't take vacation. It doesn't go away. And it does the same tasks that you need over and over every day in real time. And that's one of those tools we hope dealers can use, because obsolescence, yeah, we know what it is at a high level, but to your point, I may want to send something back, or I may want to discount something in 7 days, 14 days. You know, yeah. I talk with a lot of dealers who do a lot of buying, but don't have a lot of purchasing experience, you know? So, you know, understanding that you may buy something in January and sell it for full price the next November, but you don't make your profit, really isn't there. That's depreciated. You know, usually to kind of keep within your margins as a general principle, you're wanting to roll product overs, you know, 14 days at a time, if you can, you know, 30 days at the most. So, you know, we've been trying to educate dealers that they could also use that tool to kind of help manage that as well. You know, you take a risk on a product, you know, it all costs money. It's cash flow. And that's why I think one of the big things about a parts department, you know, that'll eat up your cash faster than anything you have. You know, you can floor units, you can do things over there. You know, the service department, you're not really tied to a lot over there, but that parts department, they're ordering, receiving, and doing things every day. So, you know, if you're struggling with cash flow management, or you're trying to teach a manager how to understand cash flow management, that's a way to use that tool in real time. You can say, hey, I got this really nice carbon fiber helmet. We don't normally sell it. I want to take a risk on it. But the reality is, if you're really not moving that thing in 14 days, you want to mark it down. Right. So having a tool that you can make those decisions, even at a part by part level, and again, get those notifications in real time and say, now do something with it. You know, that smart notification I told you about, that whole tool is not just about saying, hey, something happened. It's about teaching people there's a closed in loop here. So in that case, you know, if we got that notification, we have something to do. You do that task, and then the notification removes itself. Right. So again, we're really trying to help the dealer just trust in our system, that for all these workflows that are hard to manage, that there's somebody in there managing it, helping you manage it in real time.
That's super cool, man. Let's keep going with that just for a little bit more, right? So Okay. We talked about the obsolescence that's in inventory, in stock, that's aged, right? But
right. When
you have a good, you know, suite of products, or you have a good, you know, type of ordering that brings in some popular stuff, right? And you go through it real quickly. What types of reports should an inventory manager, parts manager be looking at to say, hey, you know, we actually sell these things at a pretty good margin. We see some seasonality. You know, we're not just using our gut. We're using the data that the system is telling us through our retail sales that, hey, we need to order more of this, or we need to order less of this? What types of reports should we be looking at inside DX1 or any other DMS at that point to say, here's what my targets look like, and here's what I need to order to hit those?
Yeah. You know, if you're a dealer who self-admittedly doesn't like to pull data out and you really spend a lot of time going through it and making charts and massaging it, we have a top 100 sales report, right? You want to click your report and just let our system tell you what you've been selling, top 100. And that's kind of what your capacity is at. You can do that. You know, past that, we have a number of different reports, but I'd say in almost any system, you're going to have a part sale report, right? You know, what's actually happening. So, you know, being able to take that data out of that report and do something with it. You know, that's what I feel like most managers have to do. One of the things we're looking at adding over the summer, we did this in our service department last summer, and we're looking at parts, is reports that just focus on key performance indicators, which is really what we're talking about. You know, I always like looking through all the data, but that takes a lot of time, and not everybody likes to do that. There's kind of weirdos out there like me in those dealerships who just, you know, obsess over the numbers, but they're important. But for a lot of people, again, they're either not that way or don't have that luxury, and that's not a bad thing. So, you know, looking at those reports is helpful, but I think, you know, overall, there's a lot of tools that you can do along the way. You know, once you look at those reports, okay, good, but now how do we manage this? So using a min-max system, you know, most DMSs have min-max. So, you know, once you get to a point where you've gone through that reporting and you understand those trends, then the next step is, you know, going and starting to manage that process. Oh, okay, you know, we're selling this oil filter or this helmet or this plug or this light bulb, whichever times. Let's not manually do this anymore. Let's go in and set a min-max and start making that process go. But again, not all dealers subscribe to things like min-max. You know, that's a tough part about a question like this is, you know, I've seen, we have the ability to build custom reports. A dealer can do that within our system. And we can also help dealers build custom reports. Not everybody really knows how to get to that end result. And we have a team specialist who can help with that with our dealers that come in. So yeah. I think, you know, in our system, like I said, there's a number of reports. You can look at just special orders. You can look at stocking parts, parts you sold to your RO. But again, I think, you know, depending on your capacity, you're either in a part sell report or a top sales report.
One last question in just the parts department, right? So one of the things that I've always tried to work on is the inclusion of the parts department into some of our marketing materials. Yeah. And, you know, the most obvious, I think, that you would do as a, you know, a kickback coupon or some type of mailer or even a digital coupon to say, hey, here's a discount or here's, you know, say $5, $10, whatever the monetary amount is. But it's a coupon that we want to give you as a customer, or maybe we're trying to entice you to be a customer of our dealership. Coupon codes, right? It was always kind of a headache with some of these other DMSs to where, you know, if I can remember right, we had to, you know, create a part number, do it as a negative value or negative percentage, you know, limit it to a quantity. And then we would almost make that into some type of parts scannable code that we would then put on some type of marketing material and then deliver to the customer. Obviously, that process that I just explained is riddled with holes and could be, you know, primed for some fraud, you know, people reusing the coupon over and over and over, or your cashier, you know, say, hey, do you want a discount on that part? You know, boop. And they do it right behind the counter rather than the customer bringing it in. What is your philosophy on trying to include some coupon codes for particularly the parts department to do some type of discounting to entice customers to do more business with us?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. You know, at a high level concept, I think it's smart. You know, again, as a, you know, somebody who's in a BDM, that's really what you're doing. Yeah, we see that position majority on the major unit side, but that is the reality. And, you know, the fact is getting people into your store to buy parts is harder and harder because, you know, they can compete with the online market. Yeah. You know, getting e-commerce, getting things shipped directly in your house at a right price is difficult to compete with. So yeah, I definitely think, you know, getting coupons out and promotions that can really help the parts department is smart. We've seen it, right? You know, buying coffee, have a punch card. People will show up and buy coffee at a certain place because the 12th one is free. So incentivizing your customers is never a bad thing, especially if you're going to save them money. And then past that, I think it's knowing your customer base, you know, what being smart about, not smart about giving out too much in a coupon, but what what is worth it? What's still going to make somebody come in and get something? So thinking about, you know, using those maintenance parts or high moving parts or things like that, you know, I think those are great ideas to get someone into the dealership.
Okay. So if I'm hearing you correctly, maybe you don't have any type of coupon code right now that kind of has that capability of being able to digitize that coupon, be able to send it. And I'm only using this example because a lot of major retailers have that now. I mean, Kohl's Cash is probably the most common to where they're just sending money out all the time in mailers or digital format on an email or text and say, hey, you know, this weekend only, take another $10 off your off your purchase if you come in this weekend. And they scan everything so that it's, you know, it's no one has to, you know, punch it in as a special code at the time of checkout. It's just a, you know, let me scan this and boom, there's your discount off the purchase.
Yeah. We're halfway there. I mean, being honest. We have that first part done, you know, newsletters and events. We have a way with, again, once you get a customer base in, to be able to do that in a mass way, you know, via digital communication. So yeah, I could create that coupon. I could, you know, make a nice little flyer that can go to them digitally. You know, getting it processed, we're still trying to work with our dealers to figure out the best way. You know, that's the tough part of my job is we definitely need to tackle that to find a better way than we do it today. But getting a consensus on the best way to do that is still something we're just trying to figure out which lane is going to be the best way to go. But yes, you are 100% correct. That is something we're hearing from our customers and has been really growing, especially in the parts department. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's the easiest transition, right? Especially if somebody buys a major unit, right? They buy, you know, a side-by-side, they buy a motorcycle, whatever. There are different communications per segment, you know, motorcycle to off-road that we can send out to these customers and say, hey, thank you for purchasing with us. By the way, here's a kickback coupon for, you know, $20 off a new helmet or $50 off a new light bar, whatever it is, right? And it would just be a little easier to gather that and do almost an ROI or reconciliation to say who came back using those codes from people that we sold major units to, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can say the same thing about service too. Here's $10 off your first break-in service, oil change, or your next service, something like that, right?
Yeah, so, and we are seeing dealers looking at really, and this is where we're really considering the most, is they're wanting to use more digitized reward points. So yeah, you're getting it, but you know, it's just like going to a gas station or a grocery store where you're accruing points for making certain purchases. So that's more the trend we're hearing versus the coupon per se. It's the coupon philosophy we're talking about, but just really handling it more through a loyalty program. Again, kind of looking at that ROI, you know, like let's put the incentive with them, you know, versus just a one-shot coupon that may get them in once or twice just because they got the coupon versus, hey, you know, we can get continuous discounts by just being a loyal customer.
100%. Whatever we got to do to make that relationship sticky with the customer after that very first transaction, right?
That's right.
Or we've had zero transaction at all. We're trying to have our first one.
That's right.
Okay. So let me kind of end out the this conversation here. And by the way, it's been an honor to talk to you, man. Certainly a knowledgeable guy. You're going in a lot of different directions here, so I'm trying to, you know, trying to put my arms around you and say,
yeah,
let's try to focus on this one thing. But you brought up an interesting point earlier, and I kind of want to press on that one. You talked about the different departments and maybe they don't cross-pollinate, to use your words, or maybe they're not getting along, right? I think that this is a pretty common theme. You know, especially with the sales guys to the service or service to parts or parts to sales, right? All these departments definitely rely on one another, right? Sales needs a nice looking showroom floor unit to be dressed up with all the latest P&A. Service needs that liaison to get the oil filters and spark plugs to do their tune-ups, right? Sales needs service to install all these parts or PDI and prep a unit so that they can sell it to a customer, right? So we all technically rely parts to sales to service and all over the place on one another's department, but rarely do these departments get along. There certainly is a wedge between a lot of them. And I just kind of wanted to hear your own perspective on why you think that is. And a follow-up to that would be, what could we do to help fix these relationships interdepartmentally?
Sure. Well, as a manager over many years, I think I sometimes still try to find the answer to that question. And I think many dealers are, you know, where I personally had success or where I see dealers having success is they're bringing everybody together, right? You know, we have a dealership locally and I know their whole team meets every Friday morning. You know, they come in a half hour before the store opens. I've even sat in on a couple of them. just listening and just understanding what their dealership's going through and those types of things. And somebody is really facilitating that, you know, the owner, the GM, somebody who knows what the tensions are, what the problems are, and kind of flushes that out. You know, so you're really sitting in there in a group of people, you know, having dealership therapy. A lot of times that's what it is. Well, somebody's not doing this right, or why are they doing that? You know, you kind of have to sort through some of that. So I think just making sure that you give your employees a platform to feel comfortable to communicate, you know, not everybody has those skills. Right. You know, I've worked with plenty of people who just don't want to be bothered. You know, the last thing you want to do is go bug a tech when he's got his head in a motor. And that's for good reason. Right. You know, and there's other things. I don't want to go in and ask you a question when you got a deal at your desk, you know, those types of things. So just, you know, making sure that somebody in the dealership can explain why this is important, one, to the dealership, but to this person over here, and then ultimately to your job. You know, why it gets that way, you know, a lot of times it just, I think it starts at the parts department, and not in a bad way, meaning, you know, if I'm responsible for my inventory and I come back to an owner at the end of the year and I have a $20,000 loss, I have to explain it. So a lot of times, you know, we've had to say nobody come back in our parts department, you know, service cannot come pull their own parts. Service cannot do this. I know many of our dealerships who operate that way. So, you know, when you think from a part side, I have a good reason for why I'm doing that. But on the service side, they might feel a little alienated, untrusted, things like that, you know? So I think, you know, just sitting down and maybe being able to explain that, you know, have your parts manager sit there with a service manager, and as a general manager say, well, I'm putting a lot of heat on him. You know, I'm not saying the service department is responsible for this $20,000 loss, but you know, one way or another, this parts manager, I'm holding him accountable, and he's got to answer and ultimately improve this in the next year. So I think a lot of times those processes happen. I know on the sales side, a lot of times the sales departments are on heavy commissions. So they do only what they need to do because that's what they're paid to do. They're paid to sell bikes and they're incentivized that way. So, you know, if they're not making any money off of, you know, also selling you $1,000 worth of gear, you know, they're not worried about it. If they're worried about, you know, my customer's got a $10,000, you know, finance limit, you know, I could sell them a bike for $9,000 and sell them some parts and maybe a little bit of service. You know, if you're a sales guy, that's, unless you're paid on selling that stuff, your ultimate focus is ultimately on the profit of that unit. And so I think that's kind of a traditional thing I feel like I've seen over time, that those two kind of elements where the parts department's trying to play lockdown. So nobody can really interact in there. A service department just doesn't want to be bugged. They got a lot going on. And then a sales department that maybe, you know, really feel like, well, I'm just paid to do one thing. You know, this, I'm a sales person and I have a BDM, and his responsibility is to be a BDM, those types of things. So I think it's just, you know, those type of situations. You know, most of the dealers, I think that manage this process well, have really worked on making sure that their customers are kind of touching all their departments. Even if you're getting paid in sales, you know, it's important to introduce them to the parts department and make sure they're taken care of. And, you know, selling things like prepaid maintenance, you know, not just warranties, right? Warranties have been around for forever, but prepaid maintenance is a great way to generate revenue and customer loyalty in your dealership and keep them coming back. So again, you know, just finding ways to maybe incentivize your managers to have a common goal. You know, traditionally, that's where your general manager is maybe, you know, focused on, is obviously the success of multiple departments. But, you know, if you can still get those individual departments to have a little bit of a cross incentive, you'd be really surprised how quickly people start working together. You know, if they can make more money or improve that aspect, then there's a lot of incentive to do that.
That's a great point. And I like what you said about, you know, this general manager that you had, he would have an all store meeting is what it sounded like, where it's, you know, all departments, all employees, managers, salespeople, parts managers, parts people, service managers, service technicians, service advisors, right? It sounds like they would all have like a big group meeting and kind of talk about the dealership as a whole, not just their individual departments. Am I hearing you right on that?
That's exactly right. You know, we all know when we got a customer coming in and a critical unit and we're waiting on this one part. So again, you know, if the dealership I'm speaking of, they're talking about those types of things. The general manager and owner have an agenda. They have a list that they've been working on the week before. Hey, we need to improve on this. Hey, you were so-and-so, you were supposed to do this last week. you know, how about this follow-up? So they're managing, right? I mean, that's really the key here. So many times somebody get thrust into a management role because somebody left, but yeah, they haven't had a lot of management experience. So again, you know, if you're a GM or an owner and you find yourself in that situation where your parts guy overnight became a parts manager, remember, this may be his first time managing people, managing things, not just parts. He's going to do a great job with the parts, but you know, you general managers and owners, you need to teach. It's just one of those tools I still think gets overlooked.
I think it's also a matter of all these different types of personalities, right? And I think you kind of touched on that with, you know, you don't want to bother a tech while he's, you know, head deep into fixing a problem, right? So, you know, traditionally I think service techs, and I was one, so I can talk as one, as well as sales and parts, but I think service techs kind of have a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a more of abrasive, hey, leave me alone, I got work to do kind of a mentality, right? I'm just going to focus on what I need to do and then clock out at the end of the day. Parts guys, maybe they live between a little bit of, you know, sales and service types of mentalities where they're analytical, there's parts numbers, you know, it's above the numbers, above the shoulders numbers type stuff, right? Yeah. But you also have to talk to customers on the counter, try to upsell them, but you still have to look things up and be a little bit more organized that way, where you have our friends in the sales department, right? Where they're just kind of, you know, they're dressing nice, they're looking good, and they're fast talking, right? Trying to convince people to buy these major units, these $20,000-$30,000 products that we sell. So it could be a little bit of a clashing between personalities and the types of departments that those personalities attract. But what do you think about their leaderships in those departments and how they maybe help to, you know, I guess, lubricate the relationship between these different departments? Any opinion on the leadership in those departments helping that cohesiveness between them?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to make it a focus like anything else you do and come up with a plan and ask for help. You know, don't be afraid to go to your owner or go to your manager and say, I want to be better in this area. You know, I've had many managers where it doesn't matter if you're a tech or sales, they're just not the friendliest of folks. You know, people, they're not a people person per se. So,
yeah,
you know, I first think you need to look at that yourself as a manager and be honest with yourself. What type of manager am I? What type of experience I have? And how could I be better? And I think all of us, no matter what jobs we do, you know, we work really hard internally here to make sure we don't have any walls getting built and leave a very open platform. And we offer a lot of tools internally for people to get further education and training and all those types of things. And I think the same thing goes for really any business, but a dealership especially. So, and you know, it's hard. We all want to go home and see our families or go have our private lives. And I think one thing dealerships have always been great about is that after work camaraderie. You know, a lot of times people are riding or maybe going to have, you know, a drink or some dinner afterwards or something like that, you know. A lot of dealerships I see where that happens organically, of course, they all tend to get along better. So, you know, maybe if you see that absent from your dealership, think about maybe offering something sponsored in the dealership. Hey, we're all going to go out and have pizza tonight. You know, no good reason. Let's just go out and you all have that. Your employees will probably like it. You know, they might be wondering why this is happening. But, you know, if you're doing it just for the fact that you're saying, I appreciate everything you do. And I want to continue to bring people together because I know this person and this person work 40 feet apart. And over the last year have said like 10 words to each other. They get along, but it's just not, communication is not important. Both are very blinded into what they're doing. And again, as a manager, if I'm looking at that, it's my job to help facilitate better communication. So I think just not being afraid to get outside of the box, and maybe it's not your whole group. Maybe, like I said, maybe it's just a couple people. Figure out a way to get them together out of a, you know, work situation. You know, even if you got to give them time during the day where they're being paid, because not everybody wants to go do more work when they get off of work, right? But if this is important to you, then tell them, hey, why don't you guys go take a couple hours, you know, go hit some golf balls, go take a walk, do whatever you guys like to do, fun, get to know each other just a little bit better, and then let that organically grow. And again, just try to continue to facilitate it. And, you know, in any business I work in, it's really great when you see those relationships start to hit off, because it's going to impact everybody else in the dealership. That's the reality. It's not like you as a manager are the only one that sees it, right? You know, so everybody in your dealership will probably be happy to see two people communicating better, in particularly if their communication is paramount in the dealership. You know, right? That's the hard part, when people aren't communicating, and they might be the biggest communication line, but nobody really knows quite how to handle that. So yeah, you know, just being able to be a little bit more aggressive with it probably, because I think people get passive and a little afraid of it.
It's a great point. That's a great point. Be a little bit more proactive throughout the year rather than just waiting for the Christmas party, you know, the annual Christmas party to get everybody together. Yeah. So, well, man, we're coming up on our time here. His name is Justin Quinn. He's a product manager at DX1. We are talking all things DMS, and then it quickly turned into several different topics, but at the end there, talking about more or less the teams within the dealership and just some of the camaraderie and some of the relationship building that could take place if your dealership is struggling in some of these areas. But I really appreciate your time today, Justin, and look forward to having another conversation with you here in the near future. And any parting words, any heartburn, any types of final advice that you would want to give to the people listening to this broadcast?
It seems like a simple thing, but staying positive is really important. You know, we talk about all these factors, and again, you know, I know it being in a dealership is not the easiest place to always be. So, you know, just remembering that, you know, trying to take everything you got and keep it in a positive will go a long way. And yeah, thanks for having us out today. Like you said, you know, that you can see my passion, hopefully, or hear the passion in here for what we do. So sorry if I jumped around on you a little bit, but yeah, we'd love to come back and continue to have more conversations, because just like the dealerships, this is always an evolving process, and, you know, staying with it and staying with what's current and hearing dealers and offering advice is which what your podcast's doing is just a really great attribute to dealers. So we'd love to be back anytime.
We'd love to have you, man. And I really appreciate everything that you talked about today. And let's not forget why we came into this business in the first place is because most of us started out working in all these various dealership positions as enthusiasts, right? And that's what makes our business so unique in power sports, is that we come in as riders wanting to just do it because it's fun, right? Whether we're doing service or parts or sales, we're into it mostly, I can speak for most people, is because we like to ride. And so working in an environment that has other like-minded individuals that also like to ride, I mean, that's just a perfect recipe for a fun career that you can do for pretty much your whole life. And we've known lots of people that do it. You're certainly one of them. I'm certainly one of them. And we know a ton of people out there that are just like us. And so I really appreciate you coming on. And that's it for the Dealership Fix It podcast. Like, subscribe, check us out online. We're on Spotify, Apple, YouTube. We got video, we got audio, we've got all sorts of ways that you can listen to this podcast, plus many, many more. We're all about the dealership life. And remember, you are the fix it within your dealership. So anything that you pick up from this podcast, definitely use it. Give us some feedback on it. And we'll have you back soon, Justin. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, guys.